This podcast is presented by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at www.uctv.tv. Enjoy the presentation.
Today on CNS, our reporters cover stories on Iraq war demonstrations, new issues that schools face, the implications of a study on sexually transmitted infections in youth, and San Francisco's efforts to promote tap over bottled water.
On the fifth anniversary of the Iraq War, I got to San Francisco early to report on the anti-war protests that filled the day. Outside the Chevron offices, protesters accused the corporation of profiting from the war.
They're just continuing to reap benefits from this subsidized war in Iraq. What do we think about Chevron?
There were many demonstrations throughout the city, all with the same message.
5 years is enough. Enough of our money, enough of our energy has gone to a war that leads nowhere.
On almost every corner downtown, there was a demonstration. From the Brass Liberation Orchestra to total silence. At noon, hundreds stage a die-in in front of Senator Dianne Feinstein's office. With Joan Baez music playing in the background, police officers in riot gear moved in and peacefully led away dozens of protesters. But 30 minutes later, the intersection was blocked again by another group.
There's a possibility that we may be arrested while we're doing that, and it's just that we feel like we have to do whatever it takes to say to people, you know, for 5 years this war's been going on, and that I'm going to speak out in any way I can until this war ends.
Mahoney and 17 others dressed as Guantanamo detainees sat down chained together.
We are going to reopen the street. This is not permitted work.
Police swept back into the intersection, arresting them one by one until all 18 were loaded in buses and taken away. Protest organizers said that by the end of the day, there were 150 arrests. In San Francisco, this is Maria Jose Calderon for CNS News.
What's the point of the story? What are we trying to hunt down here?
All right, so currently we are on our way to go chat with Katrina, a mom who homeschools her kids. She's not credentialed, and according to this recent court ruling, parents who were uncredentialed will no longer be allowed to homeschool their children.
That's a cute one.
Well, nearly 3 million California elementary school students are studying.
Oh, there's my dwarf.
8-year-old Mateo Leathers is drawing on his couch at home. 5 years ago, his parents chose homeschooling over California's public school system.
There's no way that you can say that homeschooling is illegal.
The Leathers, along with many parents of the 166,000 homeschooled children in California, are outraged and promise to defy the recent ruling.
There's no way that the government would be able to sustain the civil disobedience that probably most homeschoolers would respond with.
The question over homeschooling heated up last month because of a child mistreatment case involving a family who homeschooled their 8 children in Southern California. The Court of Appeals pointed to homeschooling laws that have been on the books since the mid-50s when making their decision. The precedent-setting ruling sparked a wider debate about the issue throughout the state.
The State Board of Education says they don't necessarily support the ruling, and many expect that it will be appealed.
I don't think that everybody is a born teacher.
In the meantime, there are those who see the benefits of restricting homeschooling to those who are qualified.
I am a certified teacher, actually, and I don't feel very equipped to offer my child an excellent homeschool education. I think that if I was homeschooling my child, she would be around people like me, and I think that's a very limiting factor to homeschooling.
But limiting choices is precisely what some educators say this ruling will do, especially for kids with special needs that the public school system simply can't accommodate.
There are people that homeschool for a whole lot of different reasons, and to generalize off of this case is, I think, ridiculous.
Averyn homeschools her 13-year-old son, who has been diagnosed with ADHD. Although she has a PhD and lectures at UC Berkeley, the state ruling makes it illegal for her to teach her son. Averyn also faces hefty fines and the removal of her child if she defies the law.
I'm going to continue to do whatever is best for my son's education. And if they try to ban me from it, I will continue.
This is Lauren Rutzer for CNS News.
Go ahead, Lucy. So we're doing stories about teachers. What do you guys think about teachers? Do you like them? Do you hate them?
I like them!
Classes are in session at Thousand Oaks Elementary today. But come June, a few teachers may be forced out of their jobs.
My kids love their teachers. They love coming to school.
But school could look different next fall. Governor Schwarzenegger is proposing a $5.5 billion cut to education to mend the state deficit. The result, as many as 10,000 teachers in California receive notice they may be laid off. And many say it couldn't come at a worse time.
If anything, you know, we need more people. We need more staffing. We need more resources just to get the job that we currently have done.
Jefferson Elementary school teacher Lisa Rossi is among 52 people in Berkeley who received one of these warning letters.
What can I do? How am I going to get through the next 3 months not knowing if my job's going to be here? My role is to teach 21 students.
So while thousands of teachers may be losing their jobs, it's also the future of California students that's at stake.
In fact, California is already at the bottom of the list of how much states spend per student. It ranks 47th in the country. And some worry if the budget is approved in June, things could get worse.
What we have to ask, I think, is what kind of a state will this be to live in and raise a family in if we are dead last in the country in what we spend on our public schools? Who will want to move here, start a business here, make a life here? If we let that happen.
If it does happen, teachers like Rossi could see their lives change dramatically.
Leaving Berkeley, leaving Jefferson School to go work in another school district would be heartbreaking. Going and doing foundation work or going back into the corporate world would be heartbreaking for me. And even with all of this stuff going on, they're there, they're happy, they're smiling, and that just makes you know that it's totally worth it.
This is Lucy Schwartz for CNS News.
Back in the East Bay, anti-war groups rallied at the Marine Recruiting Center in Berkeley. I spoke with two former military men, now students at Cal, about their views on the fifth anniversary of the war.
I decided to join the military. This was before September 11th because I really didn't have too many options out there. We believed what our commander-in-chief told us, and we believed that we were going over there for the right reasons and that we were going to win this war and to come home.
I never thought about why we were going over there. We were in training the whole time. There really was no time to think. The only thing I thought about was training. No, it's my job. I signed the papers. I wanted to do it. I loved being a Marine. I still love being a Marine. So I had no problems with it.
Tenorio has mixed feelings about the demonstrators.
I understand where they're coming from because, you know, with anything, when you put billions of dollars into something and you really don't see results, it's time to say something about it. It's time to want change. I think number one thing is to be patient because we have to understand that Iraq is a has a new government, new country. In order for a new government to be stable, there has to be security.
At Grace Cathedral in San Francisco, the demonstration was silent. Shoes representing Iraqi war victims lined the steps outside, and the boots of dead soldiers lay in a labyrinth inside. I talked with Reverend Will Scott about the Christian church's response to the war.
I think there's a real movement all across this country among Christians of different stripes and colors, saying this is enough. There is no America in the kingdom of heaven. There is no Great Britain or Israel or Iraq. In the kingdom of heaven, there are no national boundaries. We've been in it now for 5 years. What is our responsibility? What are we called to do publicly in our lives to witness to this peace that we want to have? And I think it's a tremendously heavy question for Christians, and I think one we need to be asking regularly about policies not only in the Middle East but around the world.
For CNS News, this is Annabelle Peavy.
Mic check, 1, 2, 1, 2. Does it sound good? 1, 2, 1, 2, check.
All right, you're rolling.
Cool. I'm standing here at the Juvenile Justice Center in San Francisco, where there are more youth incarcerated than there are beds to house them. There's one man in San Francisco, Tony Litwack, who believes there's a direct correlation between overcrowding at the juvenile hall and school suspension and expulsion rates, which are rising rapidly.
For the last 8 years, Tony Litwack has run a youth peer court program offered to San Francisco schools as an alternative to suspensions, which exceeded 3,000 cases district-wide last year, nearly double the number just 5 years prior. I caught up with Tony at Excelsior Middle School to talk about the increase and to understand what it has to do with juvenile hall.
So basically the problem that we're addressing here is the suspension rates are on a constant increase. One thing is they're out of school, and the time that they spend out of school, they're doing something, and often that something is illegal. And, you know, and so they're when they get suspended for something minor, then they often get into something bigger because of that.
Across town at Mission High School, where less than 900 students were enrolled last year, 158 suspensions were carried out. Dan Guerrero is a teacher at Mission High. He experiences firsthand the dynamics and behaviors which give rise to school suspensions.
It is the teacher's responsibility in one way or another to develop relationships to keep them off the streets. That can't always happen. There's aggressive situations that happen where you have to kick kids out. But like I said, I think a lot of times these situations can be avoided.
Back at Excelsior Middle School, Dr. John Ignacio believes that peer court has made a difference for his students.
It's powerful. I mean, there's examples of students whom have, because of peer court, are now in situations where their families have support that they wouldn't have had before.
It actually kind of like changed me because like I don't like act out.
And this is a good alternative for people not going to juvenile or getting suspended.
This program and programs like it are part of a movement nationally towards restorative justice, especially for young people, versus punitive justice, where we threaten you with a big punishment and it doesn't work, obviously, because kids will keep misbehaving. So every step of the way, it's a battle to get a program like this instituted. So it's here and it works now, but it might not tomorrow unless it's absorbed by the institutions like the school districts and the police departments and the court systems. And nationwide, there's a movement towards that. So that just needs to keep happening, that direction for programs like this to sustain themselves.
And if it does keep happening, Tony expects the result will be less young people behind bars and more students in the classroom. Reporting from San Francisco, I'm Jacob Simas for CNS News.
San Francisco City Hall was once again the scene of the annual March 19th anti-war rally, the largest in the Bay Area.
We will not take it anymore!
But today, things have changed since people first protested here 5 years ago, on the eve of the Iraq War. First, the money. The war has cost the U.S. government over $5 billion and counting. The casualties. More than 4,000 U.S. soldiers have been killed, and thousands more wounded.
You guys want to kill and die for Cheney?
And then there's Iraq.
1,200,000 of my people are dead. 4 million of my people are displaced from their homes. 2 million of my people are refugees.
It's not just the Iraq war. It's not just the occupation in Palestine and other places. But I really, really think, with all these stats that they throw out and they talk about war and all these other things, people really, really miss out on this humanity, this human essence. 700 people, 700 plus, died in 1 month alone. And yet we'll throw out these numbers, and no one really thinks, that could be my brother, that could be my sister.
I want to feel, not only hear your voices, I want to feel your voices. I want to feel this stage and the ground beneath my feet shake by the sound of your hearts, crying out for those people who cannot speak out.
But though many people came out today to show their support for the movement, with their drums, their pets, and their babies, some people feel that it's just not enough.
I think the protests have gotten much smaller because people, I feel, are up against the fundamental nature of the system, and they're afraid to face that. In other words, they thought by protesting that it might make Bush stop the war. It didn't. He didn't care. They thought by voting for the Democrats it had stopped the war. It didn't. They didn't care. And I think the reason is they're up against an imperialist system run by a ruling class that's pursuing its own interests. And for people to face that is a very difficult thing, but they need to.
My opinion about today is that will most of you or any of you even care tomorrow? I mean, is it just because it's an event, it's 5 years later? Because things like this need to be happening at least every weekend or every other weekend. But I don't see that. I just see when it's sensational or when people need to care. And what you need to understand is soldiers give their lives, regardless of what you think about them, so that you can continue to go to Starbucks and you can continue to get oil, regardless of it's cheap oil or expensive oil. I don't support the war. I support the troops.
It's getting darker and chillier here in City Hall, and thousands of demonstrators have just left to march their way towards the Mission District as they mark the 5th anniversary of the Iraq War. But the question on many people's minds is, will events here change events over there? This is Manal Ahmed for CNS News.
The first national study about sexually transmitted infections was released in mid-March by the CDC, and it showed shocking news, which is that 1 in 4 young women is infected with some common STI.
When you have sex, what are you afraid of? What's going to happen?
Katie Reamer says she's not surprised by recent findings that 1 in 4 young women has a sexually transmitted infection.
We've had a jump in STD cases even here at the clinic within the last year, so it sort of follows the trend.
For the last 3 years, Reamer has worked as a health educator at La Clínica de la Raza's clinic at Fremont High School.
They're experimenting. They're having multiple sex partners. A lot more young people are saying, yes, I am using condoms, but it's still not anywhere near 100%.
It's a lot of unprotected sex going around and like all that, so, yeah. And some people in their relationship aren't like comfortable talking to each other.
To combat the statistics, the California State Board of Education recently strengthened sex education standards from elementary school on up. But it's a different story on the federal level.
The federal government has been failing our youth.
According to Planned Parenthood, the federal government has poured over $1.5 billion to date into abstinence-only programs.
And they think that if you provide comprehensive sex education, you're promoting promiscuity somehow. But we say that that argument is kind of like, if you bring an umbrella, you'll make it rain. We believe that you need to arm youth. If they're going to be sexually active, they need to know how to protect themselves.
While the onus for maintaining sexual health has traditionally been placed on young women, young men are growing increasingly concerned. 10th grader Vicky Perez says that her boyfriend is usually the one to start conversations about pregnancy and STIs.
He brings it up. I just talk about it. He's like, well, what if I have this? Or what if I have that? Or what if you ever get pregnant? I'm like, well, if you have this, you better go get your butt treated.
There are many reasons that male involvement is key to breaking the cycle.
We often have to retreat the same young women over and over and over again because they keep being reinfected by their partner.
But education alone isn't enough. Reamer thinks that young people need a place like her clinic, where testing, treatment, and counseling are free and confidential for all. For CNS News, this is Emma Cott reporting.
Today is World Water Day, and we're looking for drinking fountains and tap water here in San Francisco.
Finding bottled water was no problem at all.
$1. That's pretty cheap, actually, for bottled water. But I really just want some tap water.
You know if there's a drinking fountain around here somewhere?
There used to be one over there. They took it out.
Yeah, inside the Embarcadero Center.
Okay.
Street level.
Okay, great. Thanks. Okay, he said first floor. Water fountain anywhere? All right. It's over here.
Obviously, it wasn't easy finding a drinking fountain, even though San Francisco is taking steps to promote its tap water.
Last year, the city prohibited the purchase of bottled water for city buildings and events. And today it launched a campaign with Food and Water Watch to encourage restaurants like this to serve tap water to their customers instead of bottled water.
At today's Take Back the Tap event, organizers gave out free stainless steel water bottles and asked people to pledge to give bottled water the boot. And Mayor Gavin Newsom set the record straight after an Associated Press story said San Francisco water was contaminated.
Turned out that they got it wrong. Turned out to be the finest that the association that did the testing had ever tasted.
Besides its good quality in San Francisco, tap water may not have as much environmental baggage as bottled water.
We use 28.6 billion plastic bottles for water every year in the United States. It takes almost 18 million barrels of oil to produce those bottles, and then 86% of them end up in a landfill.
This campaign might reduce waste from restaurants, but what about out on the streets? I wanted to know why there weren't more water fountains.
We had an interesting meeting with a local designer who wants to design new water fountains in San Francisco that actually work with these kind of containers to make it easier.
Still, it's going to be hard to wean some people off the bottle. This is Jill Replogle for CNS News.
That's it for today. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to a podcast from University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at www.uctv.tv. Thank you for listening.